and take up a Ramban. There's a famous Ramban on the end of Ba. But start with the end. I mean, I think it's very fundamental. A lot of important ideas in it about Yetzias Mitzrayim, the importance of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of a lot of mitzvos which revolve around Yetzias Mitzrayim. And maybe I'll go through it, but I want to start off with the end of him, because I think the end is the most interesting part and difficult to understand, contradictory to other, seemingly contradictory to other Rambans. So I'll kind of start off by doing the end, but then we'll go back to the beginning. Okay. So the Ramban basically is the last Ramban in Baal, and he's talking about the miracles. Thank you. Sure. That the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim prove to us certain ideas about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God is in control of the world, he's involved in the world, he has power over the world, he has a will that man should live a certain way, whatever, we'll get into it. But basically the Nisim prove certain ideas about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was the idea of the miracles. Prove to, and the Pesukim say this, that the Mitzrayim will know that I am Hashem, that I am Hashem the Kerev Haaretz, the various Pesukim like that. Okay. Now, maybe I should preface this, is that there's a discussion out there in the world of Torah as to the degree which God is involved in a person's day-to-day life, or in the world's day-to-day running. Okay? There's one camp of people, which is very prevalent these days, who say that every single thing is God directly intervening. So that God is directly controlling every single thing. Every leaf which falls off a tree, that's because God is saying, fall. You know, every single thing that happens to you is directly, God wants you to stub your thumb, to stub your thumb. God wants you to get a job, to get a job. God wants you to do this, to get this. Every single thing is directly like Hashgacha Prachas. Our whole lives are filled with everything. Everything is totally direct, you know, divine intervention. The other camp, the other position out there, and this is a position which is espoused by basically every Rishon. You know, I don't know if any Rishon says different, but that's what we're going to discuss tonight, is that there is such a thing as laws of nature. Generally, God set up laws of nature, which he, so to speak, entrusted to run the world. The laws operate, you know, what we study in science classes or whatever. Those laws govern the universe. But there is certain people are subject to some sort of an intervention of God to relate to them on a personal level, and so to speak, because of their level of tzidkus, you know, in accordance with a person's level of righteousness, God may interact, bend the laws of nature, work out particulars within the laws to reward them or to punish them, or through however it is. But basically, it's like the ordinary course of events, according to the most Rishonim, is subject to what we call science or laws of nature. And there's the Hashgacha Pratis is a more restricted type of phenomenon. Okay, which comes in at certain points, but it's not when I drop something and it falls to the floor, that's not God saying drop. God set up the laws called gravity or whatever, and that's operative in doing that. Of course, they're God's laws, but, you know, something like that. Okay. So I'll read you this Ramban, and you'll tell me how it sounds like he's going. He says, "Umin ha-nisim ha-gedolim hamar farsamim," and from the great public miracles, Ademoda Menisim Hanastarim. The person is led to admit about the hidden miracles. Shehem Yesod HaTorah Kula. That they are the foundation of the whole Torah. She'ein la'adam chelek b'Torah's Moshe Rabbeinu. A person does not have a portion in the Torah's Moshe. Ad Shenamen, until he believes the following. B'chol Devarenu Mikrenu. That all of our happenings, all of our matters and occurrences, shekulam nisim, they're all miracles. Ein bahem teva, umin hagol shel olam. There's no nature and no laws, you know, ordinary custom of the world. Vein berabe me miyachid, whether it's as a part of the group or with individuals. Ela im yase ha-mitzvos, rather, if you do the mitzvos, yetzuchen eschara, you'll be rewarded. And you'll be successful. Vein yavar alayam, and if you violate, yachri senu ansha, then his own esh will punish him. A kol b'gzeres elyon kasher gesparti kar. Everything is in the decree of God. The esparsim u'hanisim anestarim b'inyan harabim, and these hidden miracles are publicized regarding the rabim kasher yavo b'yudei haTorah b'inyan brachos v'klalos. Like when the brachos on klalos come about, which is like the tochcha, where it says k'mo shamar kotzav amr kol hagoyim al ma'as Hashem kachal artzazos. So there's many times in history, like a Holocaust or something terrible, tragic events happen to the Jewish nation, the Chorban, destruction of the Mikdash, and the world will say, why did this God do such a thing? Say, oh, because they went away from the Torah. She is sparsing on the Torah, because they violated the Torah. They went away from the bris of the treaty with God. And he says that it will be publicly known to all that it's from God, it's a punishment. Because it's not an ordinary type of punishment. The gravity of the terribleness is such that it's attributable to God. Omar Bikiyam, and on the flip side, when the Jews are successful, like let's say Moshe Mashiach, that all the world will see that God's name is called upon us and they'll fear us. And I'll explain that.
And the they, when it said they were moved away from the Torah, it means like the klal?
Yeah,
like, even klal. Though some people were...
Yeah, it means the klal. I mean, that's for God to determine how, whatever, you know, who and when and how and where, but it means in general, yeah, it means the klal. But the point is, I mean, I don't really want to get much into that right now. The point is, the Ramban is saying, is that it's a major principle in the Torah that the person has to think that there's no such thing as nature. Everything is miracles. From the open miracles, you can appreciate the hidden miracles. Right? If you do the mitzvot, you get schar. If you don't do them, you get punished. Everything is from God's will. So what does it sound like he's saying? It sounds like which camp is he in of the two theories I described before?
You think everything is directed by God.
Sounds like everything, right? Which is pretty open. Everything is directed by God. Everything is a miracle. Everything is basically God. Yeah. Right. No, I don't think I took it. No. Everything is directly like divine providence. Sounds that way, right? Okay. Fine. Let me show you another Ramban. Another Ramban.
What does he mean by hidden miracles?
That's a good question, what does he mean? I mean, that's kind of our job tonight, is to figure out what he means by this whole thing. But on the simple side, he means it's not like the sea splitting. It means somehow it's like unnoticeable miracles. But it's a good question, what does he mean by that? In what way are they miracles? But hidden, I think, means it doesn't look like a miracle. It just looks like whatever.
Are you saying everything's a miracle?
That's what it sounds like he's saying. Kind of diminishes the meaning of the word miracle once you say everything's a miracle, right? Yeah. Comes to not so miraculous anymore. Yeah, and that's a problem. It's a problematic Ramban. I'm not saying it's easy to understand. I'm just saying, what does it sound like he's saying? It sounds like he's saying everything's a miracle. What does that mean? I'll go, I'm all with you here. It's hard to understand altogether. But that, I'm just reading what he says.
He explicitly said there's no teva, like that was in the
Torah. Again. Yeah, I just read it, but I'll read it again. He says, "She'ain la'adam chelik b'Torah Moshe Rabbeinu." A person doesn't have a portion in the Torah of Moshe. Ad she'na'amin b'chol devareinu mikreinu, until you believe that all your matters and happenings, she'kulam nisim, they're all miracles. Ein b'hem teva u'minhago shel olam. There is no nature or minhag shel olam. Bein b'rabim bein b'yachin. Elam yaseh mitzvos yitzchen eschara. You do the mitzvos, you'll be successful with your reward. Ve'im yavar alehem yichrisen oncho. And if not, if you violate them, then you'll be punished. I'll call you Gezeras Elyon. All within God's decree. So I'll read you a contradictory Ramban, okay? Because no one need to walk out now and think they're still in Mom's possession. But it sounds pretty clear and emphatic, right? I mean, it doesn't sound like it lends itself to much wiggle room. If, in fact, if I didn't show you a contradictory Ramban, you'd think you'd be convinced that that's what he's saying. But if I show you a contradictory Ramban, then we're going to have to start thinking a little bit.
Where was the first one?
First one is in Bell, yeah. The last one in Bell. It's Yud Gimel. Big Gimel, that's right. Okay. Yeah. Danny, how you doing there?
All good.
Okay, so this is a pasuk in Ramban on Yud Bereishis Yud Chas Yud Tas. Pasuk says about Avram Avinu, ki yadatev, that I know him for this, because he's going to command his children to follow in the way of God. In whatever the context is. But what does it mean that for I know him? God is saying, I know Avram Avinu. What does it mean, I know him? What does that even mean? So there's different interpretations of what does it mean. But the Ramban says, v'anachol me'inai ki hi yediyah bo mamish. It means knowledge. Yermos, ki yediyah sashem, that the knowledge of God, Shehi Hashkachaso Ba'olam HaShafel, Yediyah is a reference, so God knows, it means that which God is like involved with. Okay, of course God knows everything, but the term Yediyah, God's knowledge, is a reference to that which he is directly involved with. He intervenes with. So Shehi Hashkachaso Ba'olam HaShafel, Hi Lishmar Klalam. In general, it's saying is God's involvement in this world is to maintain the laws, the rules, the Klalam. The Gambane Adam, and even people, even man, Munachim Bo Lemikrim, is subject to accidents, Mikrim, happenings. Ad Ba Es Begadosim, until they end up dying, until it comes their time of a day of judgment. Aval Bechasidav, but by Chasidim, by righteous people, Yasam Elav Libo Ladas Oso Befak. Then God, so to speak, puts his heart to know him in specific. Lios Shmiraso Davka Bo Tamid. Right, that his guarding of him is always with him. Lo Tiparit HaYediyah VaHazichir Menu Klal. His knowledge and his remembrance of him never separates from him. Okay, and he quotes a few psukim. So now he's saying, God's general interaction with the laws of the universe, is through Klalim, to guard the Klalim of the world. And even mankind, in that sense, is subject to accidents. Accidents mean if the laws of nature have it that a person is going to get a disease, then so be it. That's the mikram. A person is subject to laws. The laws are blind to tzaddik and rasha. You know, different people get different things. But by chasidim, by high-level people, then God watches them in particular. And each according to his righteousness. So like the Avos is saying is God is totally always watching them. And everything in their life is under God's providence. But a lesser person, not that way. But his point is, though, he's saying that the general way God relates to the world is through guarding the Klalim, as he says. So, I mean, isn't that Teva? Isn't that what he says in the other one? There is no Teva. There is no nature. There is no Minagolam. There are no laws. And which is it? Is it there's no such thing as the laws, no such thing as nature. Everything is directly from God, like it sounds like he's saying, you know, in the Inbal. Or is it that the general thing is there are laws and God keeps these laws, even people. God maintains the laws and it's only chasidim, only high-level people for which God intervenes with those laws.
Okay. Isn't there, I mean, it seems like there's just the resolve, maybe the contradiction is, you say that they're not...
One second, hear the problem, right? Okay. I just want to mention this before I get to this position, which he's saying here, that this idea that generally the laws are fixed and just individuals rise above them insofar as they're, you know, their tzedkas, is explicitly the position, the Rambam develops that position, and one of the guys from Yeshiva, I don't know if you guys have seen this before, but Nisan Harel, he's one of the guys. Nisan. He basically made a pamphlet. He went through all the Rishonim he could get his fine. And he basically compiles them in a PDF, even of it, if you're interested. Where basically he shows every Rishon that he's able to find held by this theory. And he wasn't able to find any. It's like a... In fact, someone told me that Rabbi Myers also looked into this one, so he came across that. But nowadays, it's like the common common belief that everything is divine intervention. There's stories, little miracles, everyone has these things, you know? And they think when confronted with this, modern day rabbis, and they say, what well, all the Rishonim say differently, they say it's true, they know that, but the Achronim went the other way and God followed them, followed the Achronim, or something like that. Like,
no, I'm not. Is Rabbi Meir back in Woodmere?
He
lives in Israel
now. He lives in Israel now, yeah. Yeah, maybe he's from Farquhar, but he has family in Woodmere. Rabbi Har is Avihar's brother-in-law.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so it is.
They quote the Ramban and Bo.
They quote the Ramban and Bo to support them, I know.
I'm saying
that's what they do. They say the Ramban and Bo. Right, but the Ramban here in Vayera is against it, and the Ramban in Eov, I think, openly says it's like the Ramban. The Ramban appears in Eov. He openly endorses it. He says that he's in line with the Ramban's position. Maybe they quote it here?
I'm sorry, who?
The Ramban.
Ramban
on Eov. Says explicitly that he's holding like the Rambam in this regard. I mean, here he says on the bottom, the footnote, that it's similar to the Rambam, but I'm pretty sure, I haven't looked at it in a few years, but this is I remember this, that in Eov, because he quotes here a pasuk in Eov, actually, the Yigur Mitzadik Enov, yeah, Eov Lamed Vav Zayin. So if you check there, I'm pretty sure it's there. He says, he actually explicitly, maybe in his intro there also, explicitly says that he's holding like that. But the problem is that the Ramban and Bo, which we read, is pretty open. I mean, they're both pretty open. And that's why it's a good contradiction. But he's pretty open here. He's saying there's no nature. Everything is totally miracles. And the question is, I guess, what does he mean? If everything's a miracle, and that gets to what Jeremy's about, by the way, if everything's a miracle, then what's the value of miracles? What is a miracle then anymore? It's almost like you don't even know what a miracle means. And everything's a miracle, then everything's equally, I don't know, there's nothing. There's no nature, there's no science, there's no anything. Every single time, gravity, God's doing miracles, miracle, 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 every single second. Is that, it's hard to, it just looks like laws of nature, but it's not really, it's just God, you know, making every single thing drop every single time at exactly the same formula and you know, whatever. And it's hard to yeah. So Moshe, you want to resolve?
No,
no, you don't want to.
Can you just repeat like how the Ramban states it in
the other place? Ooh. Yes, I can. He says, "Ki yediyas Hashem shehi hashkachaso olam hashafel." God's knowledge, which is His intervention or His guarding, of, you know, this world, lower world, ilishma haklal, is to guard the principles, the general principles. Gam b'nei adam unachem b'alam ikram, and even people are left in that to accidents. Occurrences, odd boys, because also until it comes their time of judgment, I guess. Avol bechasidav yosem elav libo ladaso sobeprach. So bechasidav, he puts his heart to know them in specific. Liyoshmira so davka botamot, and his shmira, his guarding of them is constant. Loti parid idea v'zcher menu klal, and that's what he's saying. Ki yadatev, I know Avram vino. And God's saying, as I relate to him, I guard him always, continually. Ketam lo yigurim in tzadik enav. The pasuk Neo says, God doesn't take His eyes off of a tzadik, not off of an ordinary person, of a tzadik. Ubo is a pesukim rabim kiltiv ein Hashem el yirayav. Ein Hashem el yirayav. That's what it means. It's God's eye is on those who fear Him. Yizul hazeh. Okay. So it sounds though like your average guy, your average Joe, is subject to laws of nature, teva, klalim, and then. A person, insofar as he is a tzaddik, rises above that and is subject to some other greater law, insofar as he partakes of some sort of a greater perfection. Right? I mean, that's basically the way the Rambam develops it in Mor Nevuchim. He says that your average person is no different. The person who is no perfection, your average person, is no different really than an animal. He's like a sophisticated animal. He just follows his instincts. And yeah, his instincts are more sophisticated than animal instincts, but basically he's living totally like an animal, and therefore he's subject to the laws, which an animal is subject to, which is total chance. Right? If you say a particular cow gets cancer, you don't say it's because God's punishing the cow or ordering the cow. It's just subject to chance. So you say he's the ordinary person who's just lives like an animal is subject to the same laws of chance like animals are. But insofar as a person partakes of truth, a life of knowledge, a life of relating to God through his chachma, so then he kind of partakes of a greater existence than just the physical. And he, as such, he in a certain sense, he transcends the physical, and he's not subject to, however God works it out, he's not subject to the same ordinary chance, but there's an intervention, there's a schar, which is a reward, which is in accordance with his level of rising above the physical, and partaking of, like a non-physical existence related to God. And so that's how he develops the theory. Yeah, okay, so the contradiction, the way you, I forgot, were you resolving it, or you just wanted me to read it again? Okay, so how do we, so what's the way to deal with this?
But in the way the Rambam is, the Ramban had that involved, it's also, there's really, it doesn't seem to be a difference between an animal and a person. Because everything...
Right. Sure, it sounds like everything.
Everything.
Everything, everything. It's true. He doesn't say be'em b'yachah be'em Rambam. But I mean, there's no nature.
Right.
Right, it's true. It's true. So, I think, even though I'm starting... with the end of the Ramban, the wise thing to do is to read the Ramban in context. Someone could take this Ramban out of context and just quote it, but it's really the end of a larger Ramban. So, what I think I want to do is, let's digress, we got this problem for a little bit. Let's do the Ramban, which is in its own right a very fundamental Ramban, has a lot of very important ideas, foundational ideas. And then once we get those, then maybe we'll see if we could have a better appreciation of this Ramban and resolve our contradiction. Okay? Yes?
I was just going to mention that, on this Ramban, he says, the whole Devarinu Umigrinu, before he gives his sheet of his, it feels like he's referring, I mean, the question is, what does he mean when he says Devarinu Umigrinu? Like, what things and what? What
mikra? Oh, Andrew, you mean he's saying there is no mikra?
He's clearly referring to a certain subject matter.
Oh.
That the statement applies to.
Right.
As opposed to just a general statement about.
Right. But I mean, simple pshat means things which occur to us, occurrences, the things which occur to us. He uses that lashon over there also, mikrenu. I think he says. You know, we're subject to mikra, which are just call, you know, just mikra. And it doesn't sound like there when he's saying this, he's saying most people are just subject to mikra. V'gamene adam menachem bo l'mikra. Right, he's just subject to those mikra. But over here, he's saying mikra are all nisim. Ein b'hem teva. V'menaga sholom. Right, I mean, mikra and mikra. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what it means, mikra, you know? But simple pshat means our occurrences, things which occur to us. I mean, it could be, you could say it means things which occur to us as opposed to laws of nature, things which happen to animals or plants or whatever. But simple pshat just means divareinu, mikreinu, means things which occur to us, our inyanu.
I thought he was referring to like Pali
Yisrael.
Oh. The
other one. Oh, possibly. I guess you could say that. Maybe it means Pali Yisrael. Bein Barab Bein Miyachid means only... Oh, that's possible. That's possible, but still. I mean, in Vayera, it doesn't sound like he's differentiating as such and saying, it sounds like he's talking about even Jews.
Right.
Yeah, okay. It's a good, maybe you could develop, but I don't see it's not really going to solve the problem, it seems. But it could be right, though, about how you're reading it. Okay, I mean, it's important Ramban to do, because especially, I mean, people quote this Ramban. But at the very least, you could quote the other Ramban. But, you know, it's not very helpful just to quote two Ramban's in contradiction. Right. Theory is nice to have a resolution of the contradiction. Otherwise, you'll say, oh, I hold like this Ramban, oh, I hold like this Ramban. But you really,
If one of you was a tiebreaker.
Yeah. Okay, so here's what he says like this. So now the Ramban is going to say, this is, I'm going to do is, I just wanted to read this on relatively quickly. So I'm going to do, I'm not going to read the Hebrew, I'm just going to read the English. My own translation as I go. But if you want, you can look at it. You know, I recommend you look at it. I'm just going to go with my interpretation. So again, this is, it's like halfway through the Ramban, and Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Tazayin. And he says, Ve'ata Omer Lecha Klal Betam Mitzvos Rabbos. Okay, he says like this. Now I'm going to tell you a principle, a general principle about the reason for many mitzvahs. Okay? And that is, from the time that there was idolatry in the world, back in the days of Enosh, before Enosh, everyone knew about God. But it says from that time, early back, from the time of the days of Enosh, people's ideas about God became corrupted. Okay? Some people denied God and said that the world is eternal. Okay, he quotes a pasuk. They denied God and said he is not. And other people denied, accepted God, but they denied his knowledge of particulars. Okay, and he quotes a different pasuk. Echa yida kel v'yishtas elyon. They have elyon. How could God know? That's a different philosophy. There's a God, but he doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know anything about particulars in this world. And he says there are other people who agree that God does know. He exists and he does know. But they say that he doesn't interact. He leaves it alone. He knows. But he leaves fish like the fish. He leaves man like the fish of the sea. Just leaves it alone. Says God has left the world. He doesn't interact with them. He doesn't reward. He doesn't punish. He just leaves, you know, leaves you to be as you will. Okay? So he's saying there are many diverse views in the world. There were, and there still are, diverse views in the world regarding God. His existence, his knowledge, his interactions. He says, now like this. He says, now when God selects, or yirtza, it's like ritza, the Lord finds favor or something in a particular nation or in an individual, and he does a miracle through a change of the laws of nature, right? It's clear to everybody the denial of these philosophical beliefs. Okay? Because he says a miracle, a wondrous miracle, proves that the world has a God who created it, who knows what's going on, who relates to the world, and he's capable of changing the world. And when this miracle is decreed by a prophet, then it also proves that there's prophecy, that God reveals the things to man. Right, like Moshe Rabbeinu did predict all these makos. So it proves that God revealed.
Moshe Rabbeinu did predict what?
Predict the makos, the plagues. Okay? And through this, through these miracles, it establishes the entire Torah. And therefore, by the miracles, it actually says, in order that you shall know that I am Hashem, I'm in the midst of the world, to show, that is to prove Hashgacha, that is the providence, that God did not leave the world to chance, as these people believe. And then another pasuk says, in order that you should know that the world is God's, that means to show that God created the world, that since it's His, and He created it from nothing, he could control it. And then another pasuk says, in order that you should know there's no one like me on the earth, to show that basically he's all-powerful, he has reign over everything. There's no one who stops him from doing whatever he wants. He's able to split the sea, he's able to do all these plagues to the Mitzrayim. Right? Because all these things the Mitzrayim denied, or at least were in doubt about them. So he says the miracles were witnesses about the belief in God and in the whole Torah. Okay, and he says, since God doesn't do miracles in each and every generation for each and every fool who denies any Rasha or Kofar, anyone who denies God, right, he's not going to just do any time a guy wakes up and says, no, it's not true, he's not going to do another miracle. The general plan is that God has the laws of nature. So what he did is he commanded us to make a permanent remembrance and sign of these miracles. He eternalized them through mitzvahs, And through the fact that we tell them to our kids and to our kids and to our kids, generation down the line, like the Lenin of the Seder, and then he says many mitzvahs. And he says, you see, even like a mitzvah of Pesach and Kares, Pesach and Chametz, Yechayv Kares, it's the worst punishment if you violate these, because these are the cornerstones of the Torah, and we put it on our tefillin, which reminds us of all the miracles which happened. And we put Shema on our doorposts, and we say Shema every day, and which it says MSB Atzev is the Oraisa part of the Shema, as we mentioned, remember, it's Yisrael, because the Pazal Mantis Yom Tzim Yisrael, call Yom Echayacha. And we sit in a sukkah every year, which is a remembrance of the events following Yitzias Mitzrayim. He says, many mitzvahs, to remind us of Yitzias Mitzrayim. And it's all so that we'll have in every generation testimony to the miracles, that we don't forget, and we don't have an opening for somebody to deny their belief in God. Okay. And he says, like, if a person buys a mezuzah, cheap, it's a very cheap mitzvah, it's an easy mitzvah. You buy a mezuzah, and you put it on your doorpost, and you think about the ideas, in that very small mitzvah, you admit that God created the world, and that he knows what goes on, and he interacts with the world, and in nevuah, prophecy, and you've basically accepted all the foundations of the Torah. Besides the fact that you accepted the fact that God does kindness for Klal Yisrael, he took us out of slavery, and all that. That's why it says, Chazal says you should be careful with a light mitzvah, just like a strict mitzvah. But every mitzvah is very important. Even an easy person can think religion's all about oppressing you, difficulties, like suffering. No, this is an easy mitzvah like mezuzah. It could be so foundational, so fundamental, it could be bring to your mind all the basic ideas of the Torah. So you see, our system is not about torturing a person, it's about teaching a person ideas, and easy mitzvah. Sometimes it can come from very simple mitzvahs. And he goes on and basically explains how the purpose of all the mitzvahs is basically the end of the world, is to get man to realize that he's created and that there's a God and all that. Okay? Fine. And then he segues into our part. So let's just, summarize. Okay? Summarize and we'll come back. So again, what's he saying? Why are there so many mitzvahs? It's a theme in the Torah, all over the place, in order to remember Yitzias Mitzrayim. He's saying it's because Yitzias Mitzrayim was designed to prove to the world all the fundamentals of the Torah. There's a creator who knows what goes on in the world, relates to the world, cares what man does, punishes, rewards, punishes the Mitzrayim, rewards the Jews. He has capability to control the laws of nature. He reveals his plan to Nevi'im, as predicted, as you see that Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the Malachos were going to happen in so and so a time. So you see his strength, all the different principles, the foundations of the Torah were all, in the Malachos. And the Malachos proved those things to the world. But again, God did them once and then eternalized their memory through the Torah and through all these mitzvahs. And that's why we're always doing things to remind us of these miracles, because these miracles is not the miracles themselves, but it's all the particular ideas which are indicated by the miracles. That's the emphasis. Not just to think of miracles. We don't really care about the miracles per se. We care about the lessons which are derived from the miracles. And that's, you read the Torah, it clearly says many times throughout the miracles that it's in order that you know this idea, nor you know this idea, nor you know that idea. It's all about the lessons to learn from the miracle, not for just to say, wow, God does miracles.
Okay, so those are the quiet miracles? Is that what you were...
No, then we're going to get to that. Then he says, and that, from the quiet miracle, from the public miracles, we could then learn about the quiet miracles. So we'll get back to that. Okay. But I want to just, before we do that, so is it clear that the miracles prove all the things which he's claiming that it proves? Before we go on to, I think most of them are clear, but maybe one or two of them aren't so clear. Is it clear that what he's claiming, the miracles, if you'd witness these miracles, right, these things happen, let's say, all the Makos, plagues, splitting the sea, all that, does it prove all the things which he claims it proves? Sound reasonable?
You say that again, I'm sorry.
Do the miracles prove all the things he claims that they prove? Yes. Yes, if you witness these miracles, will you conclude that God has knows about what's going on in the world? Seems so, right?
Yep.
He has power to control the laws.
Mm-hmm.
And then he reveals his will to he reveals knowledge to Nevi'im, Moshe Rabbeinu, let's say, who predicted them. Right? Seems so.
Well, he's, you could say that it was in Moshe's power.
Oh, okay. I mean, I guess that's a possible conclusion. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't saying that himself, you know. He was, like, davening to God. And, I mean, you could say it's like a scam. Moshe Rabbeinu is a super magic man. He's just blaming God. Well, I guess it's a possible interpretation, but it's not that reasonable, you know. Say that a person is doing all these things, you know. Yeah. Okay, I hear you, but it's not doesn't seem like reasonable, but then it's even more, you know. What about the fact that he's saying is that it proves that there's the creator? Does it prove that he mentions that?
Yeah, also God you created the world.
Right. Created the world from nothing. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's no.
How does it prove that? I mean, I understand saying it proves that there's control over the world. But how do you know it created the world? Right, like I couldn't, for instance, change the form of, like I could take a computer and I could mess it up. I could infect it with a virus. I could destroy it, I could change it, but it doesn't mean I created it. Just because you could change something doesn't mean you created the thing. So how does it prove, the fact that God could do miracles, how does that prove that God created the world from nothing? Maybe he didn't create the world from nothing. Maybe the world existed eternally, and God exists eternally, but God could change it. Right? How do you know that? Right, you follow my question?
Yeah.
Well, Dorman seems to be claiming this. Right, but it's not clear exactly how it follows.
How through witnessing these miracles, yes, we can conclude that God
created the world. Created. Yeah, how could he conclude that?
Well, you have to look at the miracles and the nation of miracles and what took place.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, so let's say splitting the sea. Is that a good one?
Splitting the sea.
Yeah, that's a good one. Sure, okay. Okay.
People like that one, yeah.
Right, so take that for example, right? So the miracle of splitting the sea was by splitting the sea. In general, like you have a very large event that takes place.
Right.
Like, in general, anything that's manipulation is like a controlled.
Okay.
Situation. But
okay.
Here, you're talking about a huge, massive natural phenomenon, and it's totally changing its nature.
No, right. So definitely God could control the laws of nature, that I hear. But does that mean he created the laws? Does that mean he created the universe? Or nothing?
It's a suspense of the laws of nature.
Okay, fine. So he has the ability to suspend the laws of nature, but why does that mean he created them? Maybe he just has the ability to suspend them. Look, I could suspend the computer's working by turning off the off switch or by, you know, putting in some sort of a virus.
Right,
doesn't mean I created it.
There's a difference between a manipulation and a suspension.
Well,
and a changing of the nature of, in other words, it would be like, you know, the nature of something is to work a certain way.
Right.
Right, now you're taking that thing whose nature is a certain way and you're completely subverting it.
Okay.
And making it act in a completely different way.
So let's say I take a computer which is designed to do X, I see, and I can maybe change it around and make it into a different type of machine that could do something else.
But you're still taking the parts and you're making it into something different.
So maybe that's what God did.
But
how do you know how exactly he changed the laws of nature? I mean, he took the laws. Electromagnetism and made it attract instead of repel, and he made this and whatever. And he just changed around some things in order to make them, do different stuff. And you know what it means? He created the laws just because he could manipulate them.
Did God, through any of these miracles or through Moshe, say that he, through these miracles, did he say that he created the world?
That's a good question. I mean, he says, Ki la Hashem ha'aretz. That's what he wants to say. He means that the world is God's, which he says means, the Ramban says means that he created them. They're his. What do you mean they're his? Because he created them. Otherwise, why the his? Why is it his? Like, just because you can manipulate something doesn't mean it's yours. So he's saying is when the pasuk says that, that means that it is in order to show that the world belongs to God. It means it belongs to him because he made it. So it's like his. But if he didn't make it and he just has some sort of a manipulative power over it, you wouldn't say it's his. So the Ramban, so it's not explicit, but that's the way the Ramban is learning what the pasuk is saying.
So the reason I asked that question is because could that be a basis for
proving it?
Yeah. Versus just inferring right. Yeah. based on the miracle.
Well, I think he's saying that the miracles themselves show it. I mean, okay. if you just want to show it through the Torah, just write all, they don't need miracles, just write the Torah and say, I am God, I am all powerful, I'm this, I'm that, and then, you know. But presumably he wants to prove it through the witnessing of the events themselves, to prove it to the world, to all the people, which they'll pass down to their generation, you know. So he's trying to set up like an event which is makes it clear and makes it a part of the consciousness of the world.
Can I tackle this one more time?
Yeah.
In nature, water is
yes.
right, along or flow a certain direction.
Okay.
So you take the water on a large scale and completely change its nature to stop. And you take a massive river and you suspend it.
Right. Well, he'll tweak the laws. Presumably he's going to tweak the laws. So let's say there's a law of gravity or a law of whatever,
right.
a law of electromagnetism. So he'll just change around the numbers or the constants in the law, the way the law operates. And then it's going to change all the water is going to work differently because it's going to follow a different set of laws. So he's going to manipulate the law in a way that results in this thing changing. Just like I can manipulate the computer program. And that will end up affecting all kind of, you know, whatever.
I don't think it's analogous.
Why?
Because changing the computer program is different than changing the nature of a computer. Like, if you took
well,
a computer
I'll change it. Yeah, so whatever.
You, I don't know. You took a computer and you changed it into water.
Fine, I grind it up and whatever, I change it into water. Whatever, I mean, here it's the law. You're just changing the, it's really in a certain sense, it's like the laws of the program for how the universe will run. There's equations for how it works, and you're just changing the equations, and presumably you can change them in a way that will end up popping out a different type
right.
of
Right, that's the point exactly. But changing a law of nature is something that...
You can't do if you didn't create them?
These are immutable, yeah. They're immutable.
Well, that's the question. You have to, I mean... Okay, yeah, I think you're on to something, but why? What's the argument that it means he created them?
Well, it sounds like he's just making the original assumption that, like, creating something and owning something is one and the same as controlling it, and there's no...
Right, but it just doesn't seem true. I mean, I could manipulate something, just so any person knows. You can manipulate your friend's thing, it doesn't mean it's yours, it doesn't mean you created it.
Yeah, right, it just seems like... That's his general assumption, and that's consistent with...
Oh, but his assumption is wrong. So then we assume he's a smart man, he wouldn't make such an assumption if he could defeat it in a moment's thought. Right? I mean, he knew that you could manipulate your friend's thing even though you haven't created it. You know, you don't own it. That's, you know, you don't need a...
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we should hope that his thing is, you know, more grounded than that. So, maybe he means, see what do you think of this, I'm not sure, but, so, see, what's the other option? I mean, either you'll say God created the laws, they're created, or you say that the laws are eternal.
Come with the laws of nature, yes.
Okay, there are two options. Either they're created, right? And we say, call God the creator of the laws. Or, they're not created. What does it mean they're not created? It means they're eternal. They're fixed. They exist because they exist. You can't say, like, why do they exist this way? They just are. They're eternal laws. Just like we'll say God exists, it's just he does. So you'll say, is their nature is to exist. And these are the laws. They're immutable, like you're saying, Moshe. They're immutable, intrinsic, fixed fixtures in the universe. They just are the way they are because they are. Unchangeable, like the way we think of laws of nature, right? That's the way scientists think of nature. They just are. These are just the laws, fixed, eternal, immutable, right? or they're not. Or you say that they're basically, they're not immutable, they're brought into existence and they're caused by something, and then, right, and we're called that God, we trace that, so who caused them, who caused them, who caused them, you go back to God, who is immutable, who is eternal, that, right? Fine. Now, if you say the laws are eternal, which was like Aristotle's view, for instance, is that God, he held by God, and he held by laws of nature, and they're all eternal, immutable things in the universe. So if you really, if you maintain that, then you can manipulate the laws. You can change the laws. Because the very theory is that the laws are immutable, eternal, intrinsic realities. So you can't just change them. See, I could change a computer because the computer is not an immutable thing. It's a created thing, and its existence is because of whatever, and I can manipulate it. But the question about the laws of nature are they created entities, or are they immutable, intrinsic entities? And if they're intrinsic entities, it means this is what the universe is by definition. You can't now start manipulating it and changing it and playing around with the equations. That's not, then they're not immutable anymore. Because then they're not, they don't have the nature, the internal intrinsic existence. So the fact that they are changeable shows you that they're not intrinsic fixed parts of the universe. But their nature is so to speak, dependent. It's not, it doesn't have to be that way. So that indicates that they really are, the laws themselves are not intrinsic and fixed, but they really depend upon God's will. And then that indicates that God created them. Since he created them, he can manipulate them. But the other theory, if he didn't create them, because the competing theory is that they're just intrinsic parts of the universe, and then they wouldn't be manipulatable through God or through anything, because they're just fixed. They're part of the universe. Like Aristotle held these things were impossible. He didn't hold the possibility of miracles, because they're fixed, the laws are fixed. Can't change them. And the scientists would hold miracles are impossible. Because they're the laws. Can't just change them.
What did they say about
miracles?
Yeah, since the spit in the sea didn't happen.
Oh yeah, they say that. It's jerks. No, yeah, some people deny the Torah and say that things are just not right. Sure. Yeah, most atheists deny the Torah. Right, you with me or no?
Why is there no in-between theory?
Oh, so it's a good question. So I guess you have to think into it. This is a subtle point, but I think it makes sense. But I'll try to argue the point, but you have to think into yourself also. But the in-between theory is, well, why don't you formulate it? So how would the in-between theory go? That
there are laws that are immutable by, that are, that cannot be changed by anyone but God.
Because I think immutable means immutable. Like, once you say they're immutable, it means like they are, they intrinsically exist in the universe. So if that's like their nature, then it doesn't make sense to say that they could be changed by anyone. But it doesn't matter by who. It's like a self-contradiction to say they're immutable, but one person can change them. That's not immutable. Notice the nature of the concept of immutable intrinsic laws is that they are the way they are, like by definition. And they're not, God can't change them, they just are. God doesn't change himself, this is the universe. It's a given, it's a fixed. It's not something which is subject to change. So God, you'll say, changes things which are subject to change. But that which isn't, which, if you're giving these laws like a status of like an eternal existence, you're putting them like on par with God. You're making them as like fixtures. And to fix something of that quality of existence doesn't lend itself to being manipulated.
Okay, and you have a different middle ground.
Yes.
That they are not immutable, they're changeable. Okay. Yeah, but God's not the one who created them. God is just powerful. Someone else, there's someone who created that other than God.
And then, okay. I mean, I guess you could say that. You mean there's someone else who created them. And this other guy is immutable? Or this other guy is also created by God? Is this guy created by God, or is this guy?
No. God is, I guess, so to speak, under.
Oh, God's under this.
Yeah, there was a creator who created these laws, but God has the ability.
I understand.
to manipulate, because these are...
But and the real, the big guy allows God to do this stuff?
Apparently so.
I mean, I think that might be like an Occam's razor kind of thing. He's like, you're just saying, maybe, you know that God has control over these things, and you know that these things are created. Now you're just saying, hey, maybe there's like another blind,
right,
invisible guy who set the whole thing up, who's yeah, but
the point that person wants to deny.
I know, but I don't think he's saying is like if a person wants to deny, you can make up any theory. The question is it reasonable? I mean, I guess this is kind of the point, Jeremy, also, is that, and I'm not, this is like deep stuff. I'm not fully confident about this stuff, but the point is like you can make up a lot of theories. Which have a lot of different ways of working. You know, maybe there's a god, maybe there's seven gods, and only six of them allow them, and they work on different days, and I know you can make up a lot of different stuff, you know? And you can refute every theory, but the question is, what are the reasonable theories, and the possible theories? So, the theories out there, which are in competition, is like the way the Rambam starts off. There are certain theories. There's a theory that there's no god. There's a theory that there's a god, but he doesn't know particulars. There's a theory of God that he doesn't have power. I mean, there are different theories. And then there's a theory of Aristotle, which is eternity of the universe. Like, given the theories which are out there, which there are certain, philosophical positions which are, like, so to speak, viable. And I think the Rambam, the Torah's Avram Avinu, was able to, with his mind, figure out the true one without miracles. But in general, your average person can't differentiate between what's the right theory. But there are crazy theories, and then there are, so to speak, legitimate theories. And the miracles prove this is the best, of the viable options, this is the theory. Now, you can make other theories, which are maybe the miracles don't differentiate between, like the idea that there's other gods and whatever, but they're just not reasonable. Like, there's no reason to posit them. You're just making up other things because you want to deny and you want to make up other, Like, to posit that, say they prove there's a god, but maybe there's a god above the god, and a god above him, and a god above him, and there's billions, infinitely many gods, and, I mean, I don't know if you can be able to disprove things like that.
Right.
But they're not reasonable. In your mind, there's no reason to posit them other than the fact that you want to deny. The Rambam's talking about there are other reasonable theories, but the miracles are disproving those things.
What about the Yesh Me'ayin? Is that going into that, that would indicate there's something immutable?
Yeah, I don't know, it's a good question, like Plato's theory, that kind of thing. Maybe there's something.
There's something.
I don't know, good question. Yeah, let's leave it alone. Good question you're asking. Let's move on, though. Okay? Okay. So basically, but the point I think is, this is like somewhat of a detail, an interesting one. But the main point of the thrust of Ramban is that the miracles support, prove to the world, and stand as a proof, the Doridoros, for all generations of all the foundations of the Torah. And that's why the Torah made such a point of making us remember them. Okay? Through many, 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 many mitzvahs. We're always remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim. Every day, a few times a day. It's like everywhere. Everywhere in the Torah. Okay? Fine. Now he moves towards the punchline, which is our difficult part. He says, from these open miracles, from these open public miracles, a person is led to believe, to admit in the hidden miracles, which are a foundation of the whole Torah. That a person has no part of the Torah of Moshe unless he believes that everything, all our matters and all our occurrences are all nisim, all miracles. There's no nature, whether in public or in private. But if you do the mitzvos, then you get the reward, and if not, then you get punished. All according to God's decree. So what's he saying? How do you go? What's his conclusion here? He's drawing some sort of a conclusion that from the miracles, the open public miracles, which we know happen, you can now derive, it follows, about these private miracles. What are these private miracles, and how exactly do we derive this? It sounds like he's saying we can make a deduction. So what's his deduction? What's he talking about? How does the deduction go? And what is the deduction? And doesn't saying there's no such thing as nature and saying everything's a miracle undermine the whole awesomeness of miracles? all, you know.
So you're talking about once you believe that these miracles demonstrate that God created the world,
yes.
Then even watching a tree grow or anything okay. like that could be like a quiet miracle okay. where that is a miracle, right? The birth of a baby, that is a miracle, not in the sense of defying the laws of nature, but you kind of have an appreciation that God created the world okay. and God can sort of controls that.
Okay.
And those are little quiet miracles that reinforce okay. your belief and faith in God.
Okay. Okay. So what does he mean when he says there is no nature? Ein bahem teva. Everything is miracles, there is no nature in running of the world.
Well, because nature sounds like something other than God, like Mother Nature, just
right.
like you said, this immutable
right.
thing that's always been there. But I guess what he's saying is there isn't that. Every right. single thing was created by God.
Right. Right.
So nature is not separate from right. God. Nature was right. created by God.
Right. Okay, good. Yeah?
Sorry. I was going to say, to the extent that God showed that he can suspend it or manipulate right. it, then it's his will when it operates.
Yes. Right. Yeah, right. Right, exactly. Right, you're all saying that. Is that he wants to dispel a certain notion you may have. You may say the miracles happened 3,000 years ago. Whatever. And they were prove all these ideas and they were awesome. But that was a long time ago. Now we live in the era of nature. And now everything is nature, with a capital N. We're subject to the laws of nature. And that was then, but that's history. That stuff doesn't happen anymore, and that's has no relevance to today. But he's saying is that once you see that God created the world, what do you deduce from the miracles? God created the world. He was involved in the world. He has power over the world. He has a desire, a will that man lives in a certain way. So now that's something we could learn about the world. And now when we see the laws of nature operating, what we call science operating, how are we to interpret that? Well, we have to interpret that is the way God runs the world these days. It's not, we can't look at nature as an independent thing, like with a capital N, like nature. Nature is a subcase of God's method of running the world. One way God sometimes runs the world with miracles, he ordinarily runs the world with nature. But nature is more correctly called the ordinary way that God runs the world. And then there's the extraordinary way. There's the hidden miracles and there's the open. The open miracles are God running the world, announcing to everybody, I'm running the world. The hidden miracles are God running the world just the same. If he created the world and he's involved in the world, he's the same God running the world, but it's not in a publicly announced way that this is the case. We have to deduce it from the fact that we see it, saw the miracles once upon a time, and figure out, you know, how does that carry over to today? So he's saying is once you see the principles about how God runs the world, you'll say, why isn't he doing miracles now? So he says, because God's desire in general is that he set up a universe which operates according to fixed laws. And he interacted once or at isolated points in order to make these points clear to man, to show man these ideas. And then he made these permanent in man's knowledge through all the mitzvahs. Through the Torah, through the mitzvahs, and now we know about it because he already did it. It's one time. He doesn't want to. Once, if you do miracles all the time, there's no laws of nature. There's no chachma, and God wants the universe to operate according to chachma. Man could see the chachma of Hashem in the universe. So he showed him once these ideas, and then he made them eternalized through the Torah and mitzvahs, and now it operates by nature. But now what are the principles we derive from there? That God rewards the tzaddikim and he punishes the rishayim. He punishes the Mitzrayim, he rewards the Jews. He has a desire, a will, that man should live a certain way, and there's Harva Onesh. That's a principle we could derive, reward and punishment. So now that must be that's also working these days. It's in a implicit form, in a way, a hidden form, and how it exactly operates it's not clear. God does, he carries out his reward and punishment in a hidden way. Whether it's in general, one way is through the laws themselves, that a person who lives life of Torah will be happier and will be successful in general, and a person who lives a corrupt life will be unhappy and will be unsuccessful. And arguably in certain cases, God has to manipulate the laws, and however it is that he works it out, as we don't know the particulars. But we're saying is the concepts which we learn from Yetzias Mitzrayim, if you think of them as relics of the past, he says you have no part of Torah. Because when you're involved in Torah, we're saying it's current. It's a current phenomenon. The idea of God running the world, judging the world, is a current phenomenon. But it's just that maybe God's judgment of a particular is, like he says in Vayera, that this person is not a tzaddik and is subject to the laws of nature. He is subject to chance. He's like an animal and he's subject to chance. But that's, you can't think that nature controls him. No, God controls him through subjecting him to his laws, which he deems are the laws that govern animals, govern low people who are not at a level where they rise up above their instincts of the animalistic nature. But that's, don't think that that person, oh, that person, God has nothing to do with him. No, God does. God says, you're subject to the laws of nature. So that's what he's saying. You can't, it's easy to get lulled into thinking of nature as in science and as if it's like an independently existing thing. But he says you have to learn from what we see from the Nisim and now know how to interpret the particulars which we see and how they impact the things which we see. But he doesn't mean, therefore, there's no such thing. How exactly God does it? Yeah, of course there are laws, there are kolam, there are general principles. When he's saying there's no such thing as nature, he means in the independently existing type of sense.
But where does the issue of like disease and things like that fit in? So if a guy really is a tzaddik,
right?
A guy like that wouldn't lose a child or something, right?
Well, yet, he wouldn't have something which happened to him, which is not justice. I mean, we don't know when and where justice is and who deserves what and whether a person sins or doesn't sin. And so what we do know is that what happens in this world is under God's judgment and under God's knowledge. And he makes sure that what happens is within another person, is within a person's life. But like, for instance, a high-level person, Moshe Rabbeinu, has sinned, and Moshe Rabbeinu was punished also. So the idea of, but it's not like something is missing God's notice, getting under the radar. You know, it's happening, but God doesn't like a president. Something that could happen in a country, let's say, and the president doesn't know about it, and it happens outside of his watch and out of his call of duty or whatever, and it's a fluke. He runs, it's a just country, but look, things happen, which the president can't control about. It's too big a country, and the president tries to set up justice, but his scope is limited. That's not the case with God. What's happening is under his auspices, and there's justice there. But it doesn't mean that the formula works, that, oh, if you do daven three times a day, then nothing, and then your kid won't die.
No, I was just thinking some guy might be just, God may determine he's subject to the laws,
right,
to nature,
right,
and he's like an animal, and right, a tzaddik wouldn't be.
Right.
And I thought you were saying the sort of the nature that the Russia would be subject to might be disease and,
right,
you know, other things, but the tzaddik wouldn't be.
Right, so, right. But the tzaddik, he's saying it depends. Like a tzaddik like Avraham Avinu, he's saying it's the highest level tzaddik, he's saying isn't subject to that. But if something bad happens to him, you'll know that that's a direct punishment for whatever it is. I mean, it doesn't mean he's not subject. It's just not laws of nature.
It's not that bad things won't happen to him.
Yeah, right.
God could be
God's, directly. He's directly under God's control, but God could be punishing him. God could be rewarding him. God could be trying to help him do tshuva because he did something wrong, and God's punishing him in order to, you know. But it's like a different, right. It doesn't mean he's just totally subject to chance, you know. So it doesn't, we can't like, I guess it's a subject to study in its own right, but it's hard to, the point is more is to, that's what I think he's saying, is that we have to know God is totally knows everything in our lives, and it's happening under his watch.
Is that somewhere early in the talk? Like, the fact that God created the world, how do we know, or what evidence is there in the Torah that God knows every single thing that is going on in every single aspect of the world, even though he's the creator of it. You know, like if you create something, you don't necessarily...
Well, I think that's what he's saying, is the miracles show that in Mitzrayim. He's saying he's doing all these things to all the Mitzrayim based upon all the different things that they're doing and the way that they're living, and the Jews are living their way, and God's rewarding them and punishing them. And,
but that would necessarily mean, so therefore God knows what's going on in Africa and also knows what's going on in Canada?
I mean, I guess you could have a theory that he only, his scope is limited to the Middle East, but when you get across the, you know, the Pacific or whatever.
No, I'm being serious. I mean, how do you know, like, that God is...
No, I think the idea is, the theory is once you show that he knows the particulars of people in the Middle East, then it only stands to reason that he knows all people. I mean, it's not a reasonable theory to say
that he only
knows. No, I'm serious. No, I mean, he knows the people in Mitzrayim and Egypt and all these things. Every step of the miracles which was happening is that Paro says, no, I'm not going to let the Jews go. And then he just, I mean, God knows about that. He knows about all those interactions because the miracles, the whole storyline, totally followed exactly the way Paro did or didn't do. And when he said, no, stop it, and Moshe davened, and then, you know, so all that stuff indicates that God knew the particulars of what was going on there. So I'm saying is once you know that, then I don't think it's reasonable to say he knows those particulars, but then he doesn't know the particulars happening in some other country or some other era or some other time zone, or, you know?
Weren't a lot of the details of the Makos themselves where the Egyptians had certain like, oh, well, this
yeah,
would
right.
be a limit that God can't do, and then it just kept on pushing beyond those limits.
Right.
So that,
right.
that he was omnipotent.
Right. The Makos were constructed that way. Yeah, he differentiated between the Jews and the non-Jews and the Jews who were tzaddikim and there was, you know, a lot of the details were. I mean, I think that's, I mean, you'd have to study each of the Makos, but in theory, the Makos, what the Ramban is saying is the Makos were designed to elucidate all these points. But there's probably, I'm sure there are other psukim also, that I just have to think of them, but that God knows all the, you know, God knows. The different the stories in the Torah definitely say that. I just have to I think it's the right pasuk to say it. Yeah, it's in the Torah for sure. Yeah, Jeremy?
Just a similar question. Just
yeah.
Based on our interpretation of nature.
Yes.
Just going back to what we said before about how like most people are left to chance
right.
and certain people are the
right.
extraordinary. Like what, how would the Ramban said that, how would he define chance in that situation if we're now going under the assumption that chance is something that is natural and that's controlled by God?
Well, I think he's saying is that the laws are, let's say certain genetic mutations. Let's say disease, cancer comes from a certain mutation, you know? Now, the laws of nature have it that there's a mutation rate. Say one out of every one, whatever, million genes mutates, blah, 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 whatever it is. Now those are the laws, and you'll notice one out of every million cows gets cancer, and whatever, you know. And it's saying is, those, which cow? I don't know, it's whatever. The laws don't say which cow, the laws just say that there's a percentage, there's a probability that it happens, and it happens to whichever one. Now it's saying, so far as there's a class of human beings, let's say, who are living like animals, then they're subject to that same thing. And so far as they're subject to, the laws themselves have a certain percentage in it, and a particular cow or person who is going to get this disease is not really up to, God doesn't really care, so to speak. It's just up to, these are the law, this is the law which he wants to operate the universe to run by. There are mutations are helpful. All of evolution works because of mutations. And the reason why we have everything in the world is because of mutations. And mutations have an unfortunate consequence of cancer to one ever or whatever. But these are the laws which work in the universe. If a mutation happens to find itself on a tzaddik and give him cancer and he doesn't deserve it, then God will, you know, manipulate that and make it, you know, pass
right.
it on to the next guy or whatever. But
it's just implying that something unjust is allowed to happen under the watch of.
No, well, it's not unjust because that's a person who doesn't deserve. Like, is it unjust when cow X gets cancer and cow Y doesn't?
We once did this, that your specific din, your judgment is that you are subject to chance.
That could be it. That's a
that could,
one
I'm
possible.
Saying that could be your judgment. So you may luck out, and even though you're subject to chance, you're not going to get the disease. But if you do get disease, your level put you in that. So it's not unjust.
Okay.
And like a cow, like again, it's not unjust when cow X gets it as opposed to cow Y, because cow X and cow Y are cows and they didn't do anything to deserve not to get it. So
So a person, if you have two people who are both living like cows, so then Mr. X gets it, Mr. Y doesn't, so that's just, they're both just subject to chance. The idea of justice is once you have a person who rises above the cow level, and now he exercises his free will and he becomes some level of tzidkus, now if he gets it, now that's already this discussion of, you know, of justice. Is it just that he did he do enough to deserve not to get that, or, you know? And that's what he's saying, the Ramban's saying, is that the more a person is perfected, the more a person does exercise their human abilities, the more they'll be, so to speak, protected from these natural occurrences happening to them. And there's a proportion and a ratio, and that's the idea of Schar V'Onash, the degree to which we transcend our instinctual nature is the degree to which we'll be in better standing before God, and we'll be more subject to a higher degree of providence. But still, not with a guarantee, and, you know, we don't know the system exactly, but we do know that klal, and so far as we rise ourselves to a higher level, we're subject to a higher, you know, a greater greater fate.
Okay. I would rather argue that that applies to everyone. There's no reason for it to only apply to certain people.
But,
and I don't really see where he's getting that from, but...
I mean, he's getting it from Psukim.
Okay.
Man. Yeah, I know. There's definitely, you'd rather, I hear that. I know, we'd rather it. It's more comfortable to certainly to say that it doesn't matter. But it seems like he's saying it because of the philosophical position that a person, just because he's a person, like, would you rather, you wouldn't rather say it applies to all cows, right? Or would you? Or are you comfortable with saying that cow X gets and cow Y gets it totally by chance?
It depends how you define chance.
Well, whatever. Dude, would you rather say that when cow X gets it, it's because he's a righteous cow, and cow Y gets cancer, it's because he's a bad cow, because he's like whatever? Or would you say there's no such thing as a righteous cow, and they're all just following their instincts?
Well, you could say, well, it's not fair that anybody gets it, any cow gets it.
Okay, I mean, you could say that that's not right. There shouldn't be genetic mutations. I mean, you could say that. That's a different story. I mean, that is an argument. I mean, like you say, you need mutations, otherwise you wouldn't have cows. But whatever, that's a different discussion. I don't think that's Jeremy's point.
When you're dealing with, like, non-competent entities like cows, I think it's, okay, I'm more comfortable,
okay,
thinking that...
Okay, fine. So you agree that there is an idea of, like, there's such a thing as the life, which is non-competent, whatever you want to call it, which it's, you're okay with saying that it things are subject to what we'll call chance or something like that. And, you know, undiscerning... So to speak, justice isn't subject to them because they don't, whatever, they're just cows.
They don't want them, like, they don't warrant justice or not because they can't
decide to be good or, okay, right, it's not good, okay, or bad or whatever. So now they're just subject to whatever laws are, the laws of the universe, okay, the same way amoebas are subject to those laws, the same way rocks are subject to the laws. I mean, there's not... They're just, there are laws. The laws are blind to whatever. There's a lot of particulars, and some of them fall from the, you know, some of them whatever, some of them don't. So now the question is does the fact that a person is human give him a status of deserving something special and is being different from an animal, or does a human being have to live a certain way for him to really differentiate himself from a cow? Is it possible for a human being to just live like a cow? And it just be like a sophisticated cow, sophisticated monkey, something like that. Or does every person, so to speak, by the virtue of his humanity, have a claim to saying that he deserves something special? So that's seems to be what the Ramban's holding, is that people could live like animals. And so far as people live like animals, they're no more than cows. And it's so far as a person exercises his true humanity, which is the ability to pursue knowledge, his ability to rise above his pure instincts, that he's subject to something higher, something above just the chance mutations that are happening to him or whatever it is. And so far as he does, then he's subject to all different ballgame and different laws and different principles operate. And he could say, well, is that fair? I did so-and-so. Is that within my justice? And then you're subject to the style and nature of Torah. Not necessarily a Jew, it doesn't have a Jew guy, whatever, but it has to be like, there's such a thing as like, go to cavemen who are in the jungle you know, beating each other up, killing each other. I mean, there's such a thing. It definitely are people like that. So you can call them humans, but they're, you know, let's say those guys in Australia, you know, those. So those guys are humans, but, you know, you'll say they're animals. And they're just very smart animals, you know. So they have to draw a line somewhere. So that's just a question of where you draw that line. So there, the Rishonim are maintaining, the line is when a person uses his chachmah, uses intellect to live a life based upon reason and not just totally just giving way to instincts. But how you draw that line is a discussion. Who exactly meets that cut? He's not saying that. I mean, definitely tzaddikim definitely do. Total, like, barbarians don't, and where the line, I think the Rishonim hold, it's each according to his level. So how many people, they don't give percentages of how many people are aware, you know, beyond the line or whatever. But it's in accord, it has to do with the degree in which a person exercises his human nature. Just because he happens to, you know, be Homo sapiens and his genes doesn't really do it. He has to act and live like that, or, you know. Which is, you know, somewhat, you know, charges us with living like that. You know, it gives us a, you know, it's, we'd like to think that we're just, you know, because of our humanity, we're subject to something special and we have some specialness to us. But it really, it puts a responsibility on us to do something with ourselves, which is empowering but scary at the same time, you know. Yeah. Okay, so interesting Ramban. I think it's I think it resolves the contradiction pretty well. And I think it helped us to go back to the context, right? I just want to point out the Ramban, the end of the Ramban emerges its understanding. It's like once you see the beginning and what the Nisim showed, then he's saying there's no nature in the context of the larger discussion. So if you just start reading the Ramban at the end, which someone may do in order to try to prove his point that the Ramban holds everything's a miracle, then you won't notice this. You won't be able to figure out it. And if you wouldn't know about the contradictory Ramban, then you just say that's his position. But then if you notice the contradiction, then you start reading it more carefully, and then you have to, and then you come to this conclusion. Yep. Alrighty. So, how are we doing? Danny, you still there?